So another dip, another submersion to that sweet transcendental ocean, Srimad Bhagavatam. Today we're beginning one of the most interesting chapters in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. Calculation of time from the atom. I think I'll just leave my watch aside, because now we're going to calculate it by the atom. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 11, Text Number 1. Maitreya Uvacha Charama Sat Visheshanam Aneka Asangyuta Sada Parama Anu Sa Vigyeha Nrinam Aikya Brahma Yata Maitreya Uvacha Charama Sandhisheshanam Aneko Sangyuta Sada Paramanusa Vigyayo Nenangaikya Brahma Yata Maitreya Uvacha Charama Sadvisheshanam Aneko Sangyuta Sada Paramanusa Vigyayo Nenangaikya Brahma Yata Maitreya Uvacha Charama Sadvisheshanam Aneko Samyuta Sada Paramanusa Vigyayo Nrinam Aikya Brahma Yata Maitreya Uvacha. Maitreya said, Charama, ultimate, sat, effect, visheshanam, symptoms, aneka, innumerable, asamyutaha, unmixed, sada, always, parama anu, atoms, sa, that, vigyeha, vigyeya, should be understood, nrinam, of men, aikyo, oneness, brahma, mistaken, yata, from which, translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada, the material manifestation's ultimate particle, which is indivisible and not formed into a body, is called the atom. It exists always as an invisible identity, even after the dissolution of all forms. The material body is but a combination of such atoms, but it is misunderstood by the common man. Purport. The atomic description of the Srimad Bhagavatam is almost the same as the modern science of atomism. And this is further described in the Paramanu Vada of Kannada. In modern science also, the atom is accepted as the ultimate indivisible particle of which the universe is composed. Srimad Bhagavatam is the full text of all descriptions of knowledge, including the theory of atomism. The atom is the minute, subtle form of eternal time. Om Ajnanatimarandasya Granjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So we are in the time and space continuum, time and space dimension. Prabhupada is making the connection between the small particle of matter, the smallest particle of matter, the atom, and the subtle form of time. Interesting correlation. In other words, when you're in contact with matter, you're in contact with time. And when you go beyond matter, then you go beyond time also. Time wears away everything. Time is the all-destroying factor of this material existence. Since spirit is not deteriorated, spirit is beyond the influence of time. The dimension of time is actually miserable because the nature of the living being is to live eternally. We can see that. If you try to kill something, especially any animal, any conscious animal or human being, if you want to kill it, it will do everything, him or her, that person, that living being will do everything possible to save their life. We don't want to face mortality because our nature is actually beyond matter, it's beyond time. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is very nicely giving him this opportunity to escape from this time-bound, matter-bound, so-called existence. We take this existence to be the all-in-all. Our scientists have trained us very nicely to think this is a very nice situation. We simply have to keep pumping money into scientific research, actually pumping money into their pockets. It's a very good hype. Keep pumping the money into our pockets and we'll keep give you this, that. We've given you microchips. And now we'll give you a microchip that will make you immortal. Just keep pumping money into our pockets. I used to run a preaching center in Norman, Oklahoma, and my next door neighbor was a PhD student in physics. And he told me that when they would apply for the government grants, they would lie like anything in their report. You know, what their scientific research is, all that. They would lie like anything to get money from the government. So do you think the scientists are lovers of truth? Not really. They're lovers of money. They simply found a way to get money from the government. Not having to dig ditches. But actually I think we should make this PhD title post-hole digger. That would be a more suitable engagement. Send all the PhDs out to dig post holes. Post-hole diggers, PhD. Still they're going on with their masquerade in the universities and the research institutes. Yes, I am big, big Mr. Learned Scientist. We were one time in our young brahmachari days, I was preaching in Gainesville, Florida, and one esteemed learned scientist who was propounding the black hole theory that in outer space there are black holes, on the other side there are negative universes. He came to give a presentation to all the seekers of truth there at the university, seekers of scientific knowledge. So it was advertised and there was a big, huge meeting room. There must have been 3,000 students from all the different science departments came to become enlightened by the learned guru of modern day science. So he had a very nice three-dimensional, very nice thing on the, you know, it's like on the visual display. They dim the lights and they put this big thing on the ceiling and He showed outer space. He showed the black hole. And the students, of course, went astray of awe to see the black holes in outer space. They didn't realize the biggest black hole was in the professor's brain. That they did not realize, because they had their own little black holes growing by his association. But anyway, I raised the question at one point. When it was open for questions, I raised my hand there in my saffron robe, my shaved head. Raised my hand. I looked a little unusual in that crowd of students, but I asked one question. I said, is what you're saying a theory or is it a fact? And he paused for a second. He said, I think it's a fact. Note the word, I think. So then some other questions came in. Two or three questions down the road, I got my hand up again and got recognized. And I said that we have seen throughout the history of modern science that one theory comes into popularity for some time, and then after due course, it is replaced by another theory. So how do we know that your theory will not be replaced by another theory? Now note, I used the word theory when he just said it was a fact. It was a loaded question, as they say. If he answers that question, then he just admitted that actually it's a theory and not a fact. And he did answer it, but he didn't correct me for calling it a theory. Even though he just said it was not a theory, it was a fact. He bought into the question that yes, he said, and he said, when it is defeated or replaced by another theory, then we will be making progress. Actually, his words were quite true, because when we can actually establish the Vedic Siddhanta, which we are doing now, this Krishna consciousness movement, we are establishing the Vedic Siddhanta, then his theory will be replaced. So anyway, it's interesting here, the ultimate indivisible particle of the universe, the atom. Because in atomic science, they split the atom. So what does Prabhupada mean by indivisible? It's common knowledge that atoms are split. It could mean that in their normal state, unless they're tampered with. Because normally it is a unit that doesn't divide on its own. Could mean that. But it's also, Prabhupada is saying here, the atomic description of the Bhagavatam is almost the same as the modern science of atomism. So that makes me wonder if the Vedic atom is actually smaller than the modern day scientific atom. Possible it could be a smaller unit also. So not being a learned atomist, I can't say much in detail about this, nor being learned in the Paramanu Vada of Kannada, I can't say so much about the details of the scientific aspect of the verse and purport of today. But there's one thing I know for sure. The Bhagavatam is more correct than any scientist will ever be. That's a fact. Many devotees I've heard, and people who are studying our books, they have a very hard time with the fifth canto, for example, because there's all kinds of unusual descriptions of the universe that we didn't learn in high school or college. Very unusual descriptions of Mount Sumeru, this mountain of solid gold that's, you know, has its point on the bottom and the base on the top. And upside down, normally a mountain is like this. Mount Sumeru is like this. And on the top, Lord Brahma has a place. He has an abode there on top of Mount Sumeru. Because that's a good reason for the mountain to be upside down. I mean, normally you know, a pointed mountain. Like on Mount Everest, how big of a, hill station, as they call them in India, could you have on the point of a mountain? That if the mountain's this way, then you could have a huge city on top of the mountain, no problem. So we may sometimes think that, how can all this be true? I mean, Prabhupada told us that we are skeptical, actually, about this knowledge. In Los Angeles, he said, Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. And you were thinking, maybe. Prabhupada knew what rascals we are. So we really have to understand that that Mr. Skeptic is still sitting there alongside Mr. Believer in our hearts. And that's why it's so important to come together and discuss this philosophy on a regular daily basis. Because we have to kill that rascal, Mr. Skeptic, with higher knowledge, with higher understanding. So how is it that we get beyond the material conception of reality? On what basis? Of course, we could just say, well, it says so in the Bhagavatam, so I accept it. That's good. But Prabhupada also said that blind following is condemned. So we really have to cultivate an intelligent understanding of why the Bhagavatam has, even though it's very outlandish from the material viewpoint, why is it that the Bhagavatam actually has the proper understanding? That's important for us to know. It comes back to the four defects. The senses are imperfect. I hear one sound, I think it is one thing, but actually it is something else. Or I see something in the desert, I see some water, but actually it's only a mirage, it's not water. So the senses are imperfect, and because of that there's a tendency to be illusion and to make mistakes and then to be a cheater because we don't want to admit these faults. We want to parade ourselves around very nicely. I am Mr. PhD, big learned scientist. So they may expand their imperfect senses with telescopes, microscopes, viscoscopes, datoscopes. But it is simply an expansion of imperfection. Simply an expansion of imperfection. So all they've done is increase the madness. Even sometimes in the material world, there was one song back in the 60s. I never forget the line. This is before I became a devotee, but I really like this line. Scientific delirium madness was a term given in this popular song during the countercultural days. This song was a slap in the face of modern science. It wrote off the entire scientific community as delirium madness. Scientific delirium madness. And it talked about a fifth dimension beyond time and space. Of course, they were thinking they would get there by LSD, which is another delirium madness. You see. But Prabhupada gave us the real LSD. You see. He told us in New York City. He said, you think LSD is a very nice thing? He said, this Krishna consciousness is like a whole room full of LSD. That really impressed those hippie boys and girls, 26 Second Avenue. They heard, a whole room full of LSD. Wow. So this Krishna consciousness process takes us completely beyond these material senses. It takes us completely beyond this material world. It brings us back to that Supreme Person from whom everything is coming. Aham sarvasya prabhavo utak sarvam pravartate iti madhvabhajantimam buddha bhava samanvata. It brings us back into direct contact with that person who is the source of everything. So that's why Prabhupada can write his purports with absolute conviction. It's not that he's blindly parroting the previous acharyas. Prabhupada is able to write with absolute conviction. Why? Because he can see Krishna face to face at every minute. He's in direct contact with the source of everything. All knowledge, all power, all beauty, all renunciation, all knowledge, all wealth, all fame. So, if we would like to connect with that all-powerful, all-beautiful, all-renounced, all-knowledgeable, all-wealthy, and all-famous Supreme Person, how do we do that? We simply have to connect with that person. Who is connected? Well, the all-powerful, all-beautiful, all-renounced, all-wealthy, all-famous person. That is His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda. We simply have to connect ourselves with Prabhupāda. If we have that connection with Prabhupada, we are connected directly with Krishna. You may say, but that's indirect. How you can say Sankarshan Prabhu, that it's a direct connection with Krishna, because it's indirectly, through the medium of Guru. No, Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, the connection is simultaneously direct and indirect. It's both. Through the medium of Guru, we become directly connected with Krishna. And that has been passed on now that Prabhupada has empowered his disciples to act as gurus. The same electrical line has been extended out a little further into time. You see, it's come down from Krishna to Brahma to Narada to Vyas to Madhvacharya, down to the present acharyas on this planet. They've been invested with that same potency that has been handed down for thousands and thousands of years. And that connection through the acharya, through the spiritual master, that connection actually enables one to directly realize God through purified senses. The pure knowledge of God is already there within the heart, but now it is simply covered. Anartha. How many millions and billions of layers of lust, anger, and greed are covering that pure consciousness? Some of you, there's actually a. I beg to point out that in the Nectar Devotion it says, in front of the deities you should not sit holding your knees. Few of you are doing that. It's stated in the Nectar Devotion. When the deities are visible, it's an etiquette in front of the deities not to hold our knees like that. So, this philosophy is absolutely sublime. There are so many theologians throughout the history of the world who expounded very interesting and clever theistic philosophy. But those philosophies are dwarfed by the Śrīla Prabhupāda. This knowledge in these books, even if they remain Christian, that's all right. Remain a Christian, remain a Jew, remain a Muslim, but read Prabhupāda's books so you can get deeper knowledge of why there is a God, how we can love God, etc., etc., etc. Just like I have one student in my e-course. He's a Baptist minister. He takes my lessons, and he's also reading Prabhupada's books. He uses these as the basis for his Sunday sermons at the Baptist church. Of course, he hides it. He doesn't say Krishna. He'd get fired immediately, of course, start preaching about Krishna to the Baptist. But he uses the philosophy of Prabhupada, that Prabhupada has given, the teachings of Krishna, to give more powerful Baptist sermons. So the point is, not everyone has to join this movement, but everybody should take advantage of these books of Śrīla Prabhupada. If all the religious leaders on this planet are reading Prabhupada's books and using it to preach as a better, you know, a more powerful Christian sermon or a more powerful Muslim sermon or more powerful Jewish, etc., the whole world will be transformed. Of course, that means they have to stop killing the cows. But this is revolutionary, this Srimad Bhagavatam. Every single word of this Bhagavatam is revolutionary. It is meant to completely turn the world upside down. To turn the tide of the times, which is now flowing into deeper and darker Kali Yuga, it is meant to reverse that trend and flow towards a Satya Yuga. So we simply have to catch this wave of Prabhupada's mercy and let it carry and put our energy into this wave of Prabhupada's mercy, which is inundating the world right now. You see. Here I understand many people like to surf, isn't it? But this is the ultimate wave. How the best possible, who knows about surf? The best possible wave here in Australia, how long will it last? The longest wave that anyone's ever been able to ride in the Guinness Book of World Records. How long did the wave last? Anyone know? Any former surfers or current surfers here? Huh?
You'd be pretty happy with 30 seconds.
30 seconds? I used to do Java walks in San Diego. The temple's just right up from the beach there, and it's a big surf beach. So, they wait for hours to just for a few seconds. It's kind of like sex pleasure, you know. You slave for a lifetime and king for 1 second. What's the point? I mean, all that endeavor, risking being eaten by a shark, you see, just for a few seconds of riding the board. We have a much better wave. This wave of Prabhupada's mercy is inundating the whole universe. This is a tsunami wave. It's a powerful tsunami. It's just inundating the whole universe. And it's emanating from Sri Mayapur Dham, actually. That's where this wave is coming from. Sri Mayapur. So we catch this wave of Prabhupada's mercy. It's Chaitanya's mercy. It's Chaitanya's mercy and Prabhupada's mercy combined, actually. So if we catch this wave by chanting, rising early for Mangal Arti, by chanting 16 rounds regularly, by worshipping the Tulsi Devi, by worshipping Srila Prabhupada, by worshipping the Srimad Bhagavatam with our intelligence, by carefully hearing and inquiring, you see. If we can do these things on a regular daily basis and then nice loving exchanges with the Vaishnavas as we detailed last night, if we can do these things and fill up our life like this, it will be absolutely revolutionary impact on this planet. As confirmed by the peacock. So, is there anything else to do? No. Actually, it's very aptly stated that if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. So we have to put our energy into this Sankirtan revolution of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada. We have to live for that. We have to think for that, we have to breathe for that, we have to live for the expansion of this Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. By being an ideal example, and by always, as far as possible, Jari Deka Tarikaha Krishna Upadesh Amara Agai Guru Hoya Tara Idesh. Whomever you meet, instruct him in the teachings of Krishna. In this way, on my order, you will become Guru and deliver the people of this country. So, we're moving on down the road now to Sydney and And we carry in our hearts the sweet memories of this wonderful Dham, New Govardhan Dham, heaven on earth. So we thank you very much for your mercy, and ask if there's any questions. Yes.
Possible that Srila Prabhupada was sometimes wrong in certain things, in material sort of aspects, but perfect in spiritual vision and spiritual knowledge.
Sai Dvaita Swami asked something related to that. Prabhupada said, it's not that the spiritual master is, it's Krishna. That he knows everything like Krishna knows everything. He's not the super soul, like that. But at the same time, actually Prabhupada showed that Prabhupada demonstrated one pastime with Hari Vilas Prabhu. Hari Vilas was he was going back. I think he, forget which way the boat was going, but he would say, Prabhupada was asking him how he was traveling back to wherever he was going. And he said, the boat is going by such and such city. It was this boat that crossed the English Channel. And Prabhupada said, no, the boat is going by this city. And Hari Vilas said, no, Prabhupada, you're wrong. And then later on he was feeling really bad. That's my guru. I shouldn't have talked like him like that to my spiritual master. Then he got to the port, and they said, ladies and gentlemen, today due to inclement weather, today we are rerouting you via Calais. And he went, oh my God. Prabhupada knew. So actually, Prabhupada may appear to be an ordinary person sometimes. He may play the role of someone who can be... He may sometimes appear to be an ordinary person. As Krishna also appears that way. It's a sweetness. But actually, Prabhupada had connection to everything. He has a direct connection with Super Soul who knows everything. So I don't think... Prabhupada was totally beyond mistakes, actually. And one of the 26 qualities of a Vaishnava is expert. Just like when I saw this statement here, the ultimate, in modern science, the atom is accessible as the ultimate individual particle. When it's common knowledge, the atom can be divided. So then, I don't think, Prabhupada is wrong. No, I think, in what way is he correct? In what way is this statement correct? That's how I approach it. In what way is this statement correct? The disciple is not supposed to see how the spiritual master is wrong. He's supposed to understand how the spiritual master is correct. So that is a basic building block unit. That, in that sense, yes. In modern science, the atom is considered a basic building block. They have seen what's within the atom, but still the atom is a basic building block unit. That still remains. So in that sense, what Prabhupada is saying is correct. The popular controversy is the moon. Prabhupada was convinced we didn't go to the moon. But then also he sometimes said, well, even if we did go to the moon, what did we gain? The position I take is that whatever Prabhupada has said is correct. That's the position I take. And that's the safest position. Because otherwise you think you know more than your spiritual master. I just try to see how Prabhupada is correct. Even if it appears that he was incorrect on some detail like this point, then I have to understand, well, how is the way of seeing that it actually is Karuna? That's how we should see. There are many, many examples. I mean, sometimes Prabhupada will quote a mundane authority to make a point. Now, whether that mundane authority was absolutely correct or not, you see. Just like Prabhupada quoted, his godbrother told him that, I think it was Shrita Maharaj, his godbrother told him that an astrologer had determined that Jawaharlal Nehru had become a dog in Scandinavia. And Prabhupada was propagating this. And on what basis? That an astrologer had said. Now, is it absolutely a scientifically proven fact that Jawaharlal Nehru has taken birth as a dog in Scandinavia? Prabhupada would sometimes quote a mundane authority to make a point. Now, Prabhupada's authenticity as a spiritual master doesn't hinge on whether that mundane authority was absolutely correct or not. Prabhupada is making a point, a philosophical point, by quoting a mundane authority. Just like the famous one about the size of the brain. You see. But I did some research, and the differences in the brains are still being upheld by current scientific findings. There are different. Each gender has a certain type of brain. Each brain has its strengths and its weaknesses. Just like the body, the female body and the male body. So what Prabhupada is saying is not really wrong. Although the scientific finding that was given is not necessarily gospel. But the fact is there are strengths and weaknesses. Each gender has certain strengths and certain weaknesses. It's not all one, like people are trying to make it. It's not all one, you see. In some ways, women are superior to men. In some ways, men are superior to women. So the Varnashram system, everyone works together. The strengths and weaknesses are not neglected or denied, but they're utilized. You see. The strength of women, the strength of men, the weakness of women, the weakness of men. These things are taken into proper, are seen properly and engaged. By a proper arrangement of the society, then everyone's, as a unit, we work together very powerfully. So Prabhupada's vision is not old-fashioned, as some people are saying. Well, he was conditioned by Bengali society. And it's not really relevant anymore. Now we have to go in and change the books. You know? We have to allow same-sex marriages now because... You know, the householder, householders, we know that they fall down, but we don't kick them out of the movement, they're allowed to be married, so we have to allow the gays also now to be married, and if they fall down, it's okay to. These are all bogus propaganda. Simply bogus. What Prabhupada has given us is perfect. Absolutely perfect. What Prabhupada has given us will, and if we stick to it, if we don't change it, if we keep it in its original pure form, it will absolutely, totally revolutionize this planet. It will usher in a new age of Vedic culture on this planet. No doubt. So we shouldn't think that Prabhupada sometimes was wrong. Sometimes Prabhupada would, show things as an endearment, a sweetness, like, letting Janaki steal a ticket out of his hand. It was loving relationship. Is that an imperfection of Prabhupada? He let a disciple steal a ticket from his hand? That he was perfect, no one could steal anything from him? That's his sweetness. To have that rasa with his disciples wanted to tease him out of love, wanting to keep him there in San Francisco. Questions, Mark?
Yes.
Can you please explain the importance of taking Diksha initiation?
What is it?
The importance of taking Diksha initiation?
Yes.
When we have.
Were you in yesterday's lecture?
No.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the Prabhupada explains, as we explained in the lecture yesterday, that without Diksha, the connection with Krishna is never made. It's not made. There is no connection with Krishna until Diksha. Just like you have a lamp, you're in a room and there's all these power outlets all over the room. You have a very nice lamp. But until you plug it in, the illumination doesn't come. So Diksha is an essential thing. Prabhupada makes it very clear in the Nectar Devotion introduction. You can look it up. He says, without Diksha, there's no connection with Krishna. It's essential. Tad viganartam saguru meva bigatjat samat sanipanihi shrotiyam brahmanishtam. Of course, there is also practical initiation. If someone, Prabhupada, connected himself with Bhakti Siddhanta even before the initiation ceremony, you see. Because in his heart, he accepted Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati as guru from the first meeting when he was defeated. By Bhakti Siddhanta, he accepted, this is my spiritual master. So Prabhupada said, practically, he initiated me. So the initiation ceremony is one thing, but actually practical initiation is the real thing, when you give your heart to that guru. That is the ceremony, it reconfirms the commitment of the heart. That having that commitment for guru, that is essential. Without that, Krishna will not accept.
Yeah. So if you accept Srila Prabhupada as being your guru,
yeah.
But you've never had the opportunity to take initiation from him, you have absolutely no doubt that everything that he said is correct and you chant Hare Krishna, is it still necessary?
Then you are on the pathway. If someone says, Prabhupada is my guru, I'm going to follow him, do whatever he says, follow all of instructions, then you are on the pathway. Your boat is dock. But your launch, when you take the initiation, which is required by Srila Prabhupada, you instructed that should be done. So that's when the boat is launched. That's when you're... In other words, someone comes, they says, all right, they read Prabhupada's books. They don't know anything about the movement. They just read Prabhupada's books and they go, wow, this is incredible. This person's my guru. I'm going to follow whatever he says. They are connected because they're accepting Prabhupada as an absolute authority. So they do have their connection. But that connection becomes complete when they actually follow the details of the instructions. There is some connection, but it's incomplete until they actually follow the details of the instructions. In other words, the connection is beginning to happen and they are making advancement. But that connection, in other words, the plug is starting to go towards the outlet. It's moving in that direction. But when they actually take the form, when they actually get Diksha, then it's fully plugged in. And of course one has to stay plugged in. Otherwise, there's no illumination. You disconnect from the powerhouse by, you know, not chanting 16 rounds, not following regulated principles, then you lose your illumination. Of course, nowadays many people are promoting rhythmic philosophy. That all you have to do is accept Prabhupada. That you don't need anyone else. But that's not what Prabhupada taught us. That's a concocted philosophy. It may seem very handy when you see so many gurus who didn't live up to the title. It may seem very handy philosophy, but it goes against Vaishnava Siddhanta. The fact is, as Prabhupada points out in his purport, the one who is now the disciple, he is the next spiritual master. That is called disciplic succession. They have made this book, The Final Order, based on a July 9 letter, which they say is the final order regarding initiation. But yet on October 18th, just days before Prabhupada's departure, he said, I will stop initiation. There was a rhythmic initiation system, everyone agrees, after July 9th. At that time, Prabhupada was initiating disciples. He was initiating persons as his disciple through his through the 11 who were acting as rhythmics for Prabhupada. So Prabhupada was continuing to initiate from July 9 up till October through these people. But on October 18th, he said, now I will stop initiating. And he said, you and my disciples now initiate. That was Prabhupada's direct order. So the final order of initiation was given not on July 9, as the Vyuktics claim, but actually it's right there in the Vedabase. On October 18th, the final order was given that now I will stop initiating and you initiate. So Prabhupada wanted that people come to this movement and become initiated disciples, and he wanted that his disciples should be the initiators. And actually, and he said, they will be the disciple of my disciples. New people coming to the movement. So this is the actual system. This is the way it has always been since the beginning of the universe. Krishna to Brahma, Brahma to Narada, Narada to Vyasa. That is the ancient system. Evam parampara praptam ramarma jarshayovi. And just because some guru has turned out to be lagu instead of guru, which is the opposite. Guru means heavy and lagu means light. Some gurus turned out to be lagu. That is also there in the Vedas. Look at Shukracharya. He was a bogus guru, and his disciple became a Mahajan by rejecting his spiritual master and following the order of Vamana Dev. So the idea of blindly following your initiating guru is not a Vedic concept. One is meant to be enlightened with spiritual knowledge. Prabhupada said the Shastra is the center. We are never meant to be a blind follower of anyone. We are meant to follow Shastra, and for us that's Prabhupada's books. So everyone in this movement, Prabhupada's books are the absolute authority. And by reading the books, we see, well, the Prabhupada wants me to get initiated, so let me find a person who is purely representing Prabhupada's books and accept him as guru on the basis of the fact that he's purely living, breathing, and acting everything according to Prabhupada's book. So for us, and for the next 10,000 years of ISKCON, Prabhupada's books are the standard. The highest authority is always Prabhupada's books. So Prabhupada, in one sense, is the preeminent guru for all of us, because it's his instructions that are the life, our life and soul, for every one of us, whether we're disciple, grand disciple, doesn't matter. But because we are accepting Prabhupada as our ultimate authority, his instructions are our life and soul, then we have to follow them. And not that you can pick and choose. And because Prabhupada is ordering, you need a spiritual master, you need to be initiated. Then we do. We say, all right, let me find a follower of Prabhupada who is purely following Prabhupada, that I can put my trust in him. That he will help me to be connected to Srila Prabhupada by initiating me. And then we accept that person. That is necessary. Because otherwise we're deviating from Prabhupada's orders. You see. When he says that initiation is required, and he made it very clear, the initiation is from a living guru. He made it very, very clear. He gave a lecture in Mayapur in 1975 or 76 in April when all the devotees were there. And he made it very clear that initiation is from a living spiritual master. And he even said, he was talking about how in the presence of one's guru, even if you're qualified as an acharya, When your spiritual master is present, you should not accept disciples, but you bring them to him. He says it's transgression of etiquette if one takes disciples when the spiritual master is physically present. He said, but then he pointed out that just, and he pointed out, I can actually email you the whole lecture if you want to see the details of it. If you give me your email address, I can send you the lecture. But he points out that that now we have 10,000. He said, and then we will expand to 100,000. And then we will expand to 1,000,000. And then we will expand to 10,000,000. He says, there will be no shortage of acharyas. So Prabhupada was saying there will be 10, ISKCON will have 10,000,000 acharyas. The Vritiks are saying only one acharya. But Prabhupada is saying 10,000,000 acharyas, and he had defined the term acharya in this lecture as someone who's initiating disciples. Not just a siksha guru who does only siksha but no diksha. He had clearly indicated by giving the example of his own godbrothers who were initiating as acting as acharya. Prabhupada equates with initiating in this one lecture. And at the end, he says there'll be 10,000,000, ISKCON will have 10,000,000 acharyas. So this idea of one acharya only is simply bogus. Simply bogus. Actually, they want to claim to be bona fide followers without accepting the authority that Prabhupada gave us. Baba gave us authority. He gave us GBC, temple president. You see? He wanted us to work under authorities. So if someone doesn't want to work under the authority, then they have to find some way to justify that I'm not working under the authority. So they say, well, you know, they have a whole system to prove that. This person who wrote the final order, he is a Gujarati boy, growing up in the youth forum at the Bhaktivedanta Manor. Let me just ask you, did you call, when you were a boy growing up, did you call your parents like, as mother and father or by their first name? You call them by their first name?
No.
Mother and father. That's the standard etiquette. You call their parent. You call your parents by their by mother and father, not their first name. And especially in an Indian family, how much more that is the etiquette. So this one boy, he refused to call his parents mother and father. He called them by their first name. So he's the one who's written the final order book. He's had that mentality all along. He doesn't want to accept any authority over himself. So he set himself up to be the new Prabhupada.
I haven't read the book.
Yeah. So they are the ones who are bounding this idea that, you know, only Prabhupada is the guru and nobody else. Actually, he's trying to make himself the guru by this philosophy. Yes. So time is running out. The airplane is coming to take us away, so we have to go. But we thank you all very much. And once again, for your wonderful loving kindness and whatever offenses we have committed at your lotus feet, kindly forgive us. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Antarad Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Gaura Premananda.
His grace